Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the California Sports Report. It is the evening of Thursday, February 5th, 2015. I'm your host, Sky Dickinson. I'm ready to party. Just got my drinks poured. I have several shots of brandy surrounding me and tiny little beautiful Japanese artwork glasses, and I'm juxtaposing that with the cheapest beer on the market. A 40 of it, which is nice and sudsy. Just opened it up, so we're getting ready to open up a half hour of great sports talk. My two buddies that make this all happen along with me are Lindell French and Keegan McNamara. You know them well if you've listened to us before over the 2 years we've been doing the California Sports Report. And I'll tell you what, you happen to be stumbling upon this the first time. Love to have you here for the next half hour. We're going to have some fun. Lots of sports stuff to sink our teeth into. We are officially turning the page on the Super Bowl. Enough of that crap. It's been talked about to death and so much on the plate. The natural reaction for a football fan is to kind of have a sense of disappointment and loss and something missing when football ends. But the truth of the matter is, baseball's coming up here in a little bit. Basketball and hockey are heating up, and I have never been so into golf as I am going to be this year. We're going to talk about the demise, fall of Tiger Woods right off the bat here. Let's get it going. This is the California Sports Report. All right, like I said, it's a 30-minute episode. We got a 30-minute primetime slot this evening, and we're going to see what happens. I might just go late, and you know, I usually get little notifications pop up here on my switchboard, 3 minutes left, 2 minutes left, 1 minute left, even when we go a little long. I think I might just ignore those and see what happens when we go all the way. But anyways, we'll handle that bridge when we get to it. For now, let me introduce, always glad to have him here. He's a football fan like myself, just a man of many hats when it comes to the sporting world. And although he's a busy guy down there in the South, the New South, as he defined it, North Carolina, he always makes time to join me every week, and I thank him for that. Lindell French, welcome to the show, buddy.
Heck yes, thank you very much. And your brandy talk inspired me to pour myself a nice little glass of freezer chilled gin that I think I'm just going to throw back right now. So,
you don't even feel it. Oh, totally, dude. Chilled gin? Are you kidding me? It tastes like an ice cream. That's great.
Ooh, delicious. So now I'm on your level, bro. Let's do this.
Let's do it. I know Keegan's pre-gaming as well. He's going to be joining us at about the halfway point. A little steamed here. I made my trip to the store to get the brandy right before the show happened, and you know, you get in that line, 5, 6, 7 people, and I'm thinking, oh, man, am I even going to make it back home on time? Then a new guy opens up a lane right next to me and says, I could take points to me, points right to me, eye contact and everything. I could take you right here, sir. And some gal coming out of the store from the other side, hadn't even been waiting in any line, darts in front of me with a full cart. Lindell, I had a bottle of brandy. I mean, what's that all about, dude? Oh, the demise.
Did you have words with her? Did you? I mean, not like rude words, but I mean, I think I might say something in that situation, just like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, just give her one of those.
Totally. She was like going out of her way to keep her back turned to me and ignore me. I didn't pick the right thing. And you know, truth be told, a tiny part of that is on the checker as well. I mean, the checker can't look at me. So I'll take you over here, and then somebody cuts it, you know, and he's got no spine about it. So the demise of society witnessed there. And now we're going to talk about Eldrick Tiger Woods. Now, we visited this when the California Sports Report was in its infancy almost 2 years ago. Another co-host we had on there said, no, everything's fine. This guy's great. We are overreacting. He's going to beat Jack's record and all that. I was on board a couple years ago. I said, major trouble ahead, iceberg ahead. And it was things I was seeing within his game, you know, differences in his approach. He obviously had this huge emotional letdown when that fallout and the divorce and all that, and he's never really gotten right from that. Also, it's a double whammy because Tiger Woods himself spawned a whole generation. He motivated and inspired a whole generation of young golfers who are now around the ages of 20 to 25 and who are now kicking his ass and providing incredible competition to the point where you begin to crunch the numbers and I wonder if he'll ever win a major again. I don't remember you being quite as extreme about it when we visited this in the past, but I remember you falling on my side of the ledger. So he withdraws from the Torrey Pines today after 9 or 10 holes. Looked like Krapik once again. Save him face there. If you put on paper what he's done in the last couple of years, it's been an absolute train wreck and certainly nothing reminiscent of a guy in the discussion for one of the greatest athletes of the modern era. Incredible fall from grace. So not a specific question here, buddy. Just let's discuss what the hell's going on here with Tiger Woods and where you stand about it.
Yeah, I sort of fell somewhere in the middle. I definitely I was not everything's peachy, but I also felt like he would still have another major or two runs in him. And I'm not entirely convinced that he doesn't still, even now. You know, I mean, he's still only 2 years removed from a five-win season and a Player of the Year award. Obviously, the wheels have fallen off these last 2 years. There's no question. And also, I did note today that there's a report that he needs to pay his ex-wife, Ellen Nordgren, $54 million by the end of this year, or he stands to lose his house out there
Whoa.
In Jupiter Island. So he's got some serious issues off the grass as well as on the grass. Here's what I think he should do. I think he should just shut it down. I think he should just shut it down for, you know, take a year off. He's 39. With the way that golf is, you know, I think Vijay Singh has won 22 tournaments in his 40s. You know, the way that people take care of each other, the way that he takes care of his body, you know, he's got time to there's still time. But I obviously it's not working right now what he's doing. And I would think maybe the best route for him would be to just absolutely shut it down. You know, maybe do a retreat, yoga retreat in Southeast Asia. You know, just travel. You know, do something different for 6 months, and find himself or whatever it is, or you know, whatever it takes. Just get off the schneid that he's on, and then maybe come back and try it again next year.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I mean, he knows nothing else. That is kind of one of those things. He was growing up, you know, the joke is his first memory was his father crazy gluing a golf club to his hand. I think that was on Saturday Night Live. He was played by Tim Meadows. That was great. Yeah, so you're going shut it down temporarily. I mean, we'll just have to see. I mean, such a prideful individual. He goes out there and he thinks he can win every single tournament. And, you know, recently he's kind of made an ass of himself by his own standards. So let's keep an eye on Tiger. But no more majors. I'm on record. No more majors ever again.
No more majors. I think he'll give it another couple runs at some point, but it might be a couple years down the road. I think he does have a resurgence at some point where, you know, maybe he's not the top player in the world, but where he's competing with the top players in the world. And, you know, who knows how long of a run it'll be, but I think there is one more. He's got another run in him. Can we just talk about – here's the problem. The big board, the leaderboard of this golf tournament there at Torrey Pines, which, you know, Tiger's won there, I think, 8 times, I believe. Stop me when you get a name that's going to draw anybody. First place, Nicholas Thompson. Second place, Michael Thompson. Third place, Brooks Koepka. Third place, Cameron Tringale. Chad Campbell, Brendan DeYoung. That's like, you know, now we're okay, you know, golf nerds are getting these guys maybe. Frederick Jacobson, Chris Kirk, Ian Poulter. Okay, I mean, I guess that's a name, sort of. Jonathan Vegas, Jonas Blix, J.J. Henry, Martin Laird, Spencer Levin, Gary Woodland, Harris England,
okay,
Scott Pinkney, Woody Austin. These guys aren't drawing anybody. So, I mean, they really aren't. You go back, you got Luke Donald and Ricky Fowler tied for 18th. Those guys will pull some eyeballs. But, I mean, this is not going to – this is – golf is going to miss Tiger, man.
Totally. Yeah, and then, you know, the Mickelson, those big names, and that's kind of become the center of golf. But, you know, if you're trying to be really on the pulse of it, some of those names you rattled off, Jonas Blix, for my money, is going to be one of the top 20 golfers of all time. That kid is amazing. Brendan DeJong can play. I'm not telling you.
Top 20 of all time. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly one of the best.
And I don't mean to disparage any of those fine golfers. I'm just talking about for your average golf fan. not even your average yeah. sports fan who doesn't really pay that much attention to golf, but, you know, enjoys watching the Sundays. None of those names are going to bring them in to watch on Saturday or Friday afternoon. Or even Sunday, if it's a nice day out.
All right, we'll slightly agree to disagree there. We are already 10 minutes through this show somehow. Damn, time goes fast on this show. The California Sports Report. So let's get into the next thing, which is this college recruiting classes. Some real surprises. I mean, usually you get the top-ranked college recruiting classes. You're just breaking down the SEC, maybe an ACC team in there, Big Ten, Big 12 every once in a while. Incredibly rarely is a Pac-12 squad crack the top 10. And on a lot of boards, you have USC and UCLA both making it into the top 5 in recruiting classes, which to me is a signal of a real shift, and Southern California being once again seen as an epicenter for college football. So I love UCLA's recruiting class. They stocked up huge on offense, got a lineman, got a tight end, a couple wide receivers, one of which happens to be Snoop Dogg's son. I mean, you cannot buy that type of attention or exposure. That's going to be huge for UCLA. Snoop has already said that he's thrown away all his USC gear. He's 100% on board with his son, who, you know, if the rankings tell you anything, is a hell of a player. So, is the South, you're down there close enough to be on that pulse. Got to be a little bit surprising to hardcore college football fans such as ourselves that USC and UCLA are making such headway, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that USC is a surprise. I mean, they've always been at very near the top. They've always sort of been the one bastion of the West that has always been there, except for, you know, obviously they had a few years where they were down just because they didn't have the scholarships. But they're back to full strength, and it was not really a surprise to see them. Obviously, UCLA pulled a coup. You know, they ended up with four guys that were unsure all going, and Brodus kind of hurt me a little bit because I've been, as an Oregon fan, I've been hearing about how much he loved Oregon since he was a freshman in high school. So that UCLA is huge, and there's no question that they've got everyone's attention. But let's not get carried away that the balance of power is switching. I mean, it's still 6 of the top 10 are SEC schools, 11 of the top 25. You have to go all the way to 27 to get all the SEC schools in there. You know, they recruit great, but, you know, the question is, it's fun to talk about the recruiting classes and the grades and all that stuff, but it really doesn't matter all that much. You know, Boise State's down there in the 60s, but that doesn't mean they're not going to be, you know, winning 11, 12 games next year, because they probably will be. You know, it's a very inexact science, and it's fun to talk about because we get to talk about college football after football season ends, but ultimately – it's all on the field, and UCLA definitely served notice, but I wouldn't get carried away.
Okay. Fair enough. All right, well, we got to get through one more topic here before we get to our hoops, our highly anticipated hoops section. Got to talk UFC here for a minute. There's been a lot going on in the world of mixed martial arts over the past couple months, and a lot of it has to do with controversy. John Bones Jones tests positive for cocaine like a month before a big fight. Wins the fight against Daniel Cormier, and oh, by the way, he tested positive for coke, slap on the wrist. And you got Anderson the Spider Silva testing positive for steroids, as well as a masking agent for steroids, I believe. And, well, again, weeks before the fight, they know about this, they let him fight, he wins the fight, they make their millions, a little slap on the wrist real quick, and then they absolutely just throw Nick Diaz under the bus. I don't know. Oh, I didn't send those to you guys. The statements the UFC made, they made an official statement after Silva tested positive for roids, and it was Anderson Silva, who was a benchmark of class and integrity throughout his entire career. And the initial results have come through, and while we are acknowledging these initial results, we look forward to independent tests to bear out the truth and all this shit. And then they go to Diaz. It's like, he's tested positive for pot, and we knew he was this, you know, this hellion child from the start, and he's been nothing but problems. Bizarre, bizarre. So if they tout themselves as having this ironclad, airtight drug policy, yet people test positive for drugs weeks in advance. They still let them fight. They don't do a whole lot to them. That is no drug policy, in my opinion. And I'm actually of the mind that we should say screw it and just kind of, to a certain extent, let them do what they're going to do. But you can't say we're tough on crime and then kind of let it be a criminal type of environment. What are your thoughts on that, my man?
Well, this is my wheel. I've been saying this for years. You know, this isn't let's quit messing around. Let's just say, you know what, no holds barred. Let's go back. Because they're sort of half-assing it. They're half-assing it as is. And it's also just silly because, I mean, the idea that marijuana is on the same level as the steroids, even and they're giving the marijuana the harder time. I mean, obviously, anyone who smoked marijuana knows that that is not a performance enhancer for ultimate fighting anything.
No.
But, yeah, you know, UFC is sort of confused in that, you know, they're trying to remove themselves from their history of, you know, cage matches and really no holds barred and separate themselves from that while at the same time sort of embracing, they sort of have a mistaken identity or they're sort of confused about what they want. As you said, you know, they're trying to pretend like they're tough on crime, but they're absolutely not. And it's they need to figure out exactly what they want to be and how they want to go forward, because obviously they've got a huge control of the market, and in a lot of ways they're beating boxing. But they're going to need to figure this stuff out because they can't just continue doing this, sort of half one foot in, one foot out.
Yeah, and the NFL has a similar issue going on, you know, with its supposedly trying to protect players and the retired players and all that. Yeah, these are incredibly lucrative trains that seem to be headed to some sort of collision at some point. Pretty interesting stuff coming out of the Alpha Male camp this past week, a back and forth with Ian McCall, where McCall called, he said all the Alpha Males are, he's like, oh, congratulations, you're a bunch of dopey frat boys who go around chest bumping and smacking each other in the ass and all this stuff. And so they took it and ran with it, and they got the huge legion of the Alpha Male team got seats ringside right next to where the fighters get Vaseline'd up and stuff before the match. And Ian McCall, a huge favorite in last weekend's UFC 183, makes his way to the ring, stops there and looks, and it's all the Alpha Male guys. They tear their shirts off and start chest bumping and smacking each other and just acting fool.
That's fantastic. I did not see that. That's beautiful.
It was, man. It was proud, man. Sacktown love. And they took it and ran with it. And I'll be damned, you could see it getting into the guy's head. And as like a minus 240 favorite, he goes out there and gets his ass kicked. So, yeah, it was some interesting back and forth going on in various facets in the UFC. Okay, right at about the halfway point, we made it through that. Excellent, Lindell. Very, very good stuff, as always. I'm your host, Sky Dickinson, and at this point, it's my pleasure to introduce the third leg of this tripod, and that is Keegan McNamara out of San Diego, the former season ticket holder for the Aztecs. They've still got a pretty good squad this week, or this year. We might have time to talk about that this week, but welcome to the show, Keegs, and go ahead and let's dive right into this. Your boy, Hassan Whiteside, lighten it up in the NBA after the Kings unceremoniously dismissed him as something they could not, a piece of puzzle they could not use, which is crazy. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah. Have you guys been tracking this? I mean, he had a short little stint with the Kings, and I'm actually surprised I even remember him because it seemed to me played there, you know, kind of like the Gerald Wallace back in the day where he could barely get off the bench. Everyone knew he had a lot of potential. But I actually pulled up his stats. He played in 2010 and 11. He played one game. And the next year he played 18 games, and that was it. That was the extent of his NBA career. And then, you know, he played overseas. He played in China, played in Europe for a couple of years, and now landed back in Miami. And the dude's 7 feet tall. He's got a 7'7" wingspan. He's obviously a great, just natural athlete. He's finally put on some weight and kind of bang inside. But for in limited action, I mean, he averages about 20 minutes a game, and he's getting over 8 rebounds, 10 points, shooting 65% from the field and 2.5 blocks. And he's been even coming on, you know, stronger lately. Last 10 games, those numbers are up even more. So, you know, I think it's a good story here for the NBA. Sports Illustrated had a nice little feature on him that talked about how he's matured a little bit and how that was really his problem and why he bounced out of the league so early. So, good for him, man.
Yeah, for a guy to go, D-League, Europe for a couple years, I'm trying to quickly look up. Well, who coached the Kings in 2010, 2011, 11, 12? What would that be? I don't know. Maybe Eric Musselman or something like that. But, yeah, whoever was in charge there. Unreal to throw a gym like that back into the ocean. And tearing it up. So you got comeback player of the year, hands down, right?
Yeah, I mean, unless the fundamentals vote for Derrick Rose, just because he's playing.
Oh.
But, yeah, I would think he's a front runner. I mean, D. Rose isn't at his old self, so he was just out of the league for, you know, with his injuries. But I think he's a front runner, comeback player of the year.
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually was on him pretty early. By the way, Paul Westfall was the coach 2009 to 2012. I got to spend a little time in the Kings locker room there with the Sacramento Press. I got to hang out a little bit. But the thing about him is I've been doing these FanDuel daily fantasy, and he was making money because he was down there. You do it by salary, and his salary was down there at the very bottom, and he was tearing it up. So they've started to catch up with him a little bit on that. But I've been running hard with Hassan Whiteside, and there's a pretty funny article. He's a huge NBA 2K player, and he got into a little thing on Twitter with the NBA 2K marketing manager, and so during this season his numbers have gone from the upper 50s to the high 70s just during the course of the last month and a half on his skill rating on NBA 2K. obviously his play, but also him harping on the NBA 2K guys.
So they changed that from like week to week now.
Yeah. Because it's all online now, obviously.
That was not
so they can adjust it on the fly. And he's gone from a borderline NBA player in the mid 50s to upper echelon center just in the last month and a half. He's working on his mid range game to improve. That's what he's harping on now. He's like he dropped a couple mid range jumpers in the last game, and he sent a direct message tweet to the guy like, "Hope you saw those mid range jumpers I was dropping."
Wow! I mean, I can imagine. Thinking about what Klay Thompson's numbers must have done after he poured in 37 and a quarter for the game to make that a possible outcome. Those numbers must have moved a little bit too. So let's jump right into that. It was one of those magical moments where it's funny. Now that I think about it, the last couple of times I've watched an entire game with the sound off was Matt Cain's perfect game a couple summers ago. That was a perfect game, right? Not a no-hitter?
Yeah, I believe it was a perfect game.
And then this last Klay Thompson performance, I had the thing muted, and I'm watching the third quarter, and I'm like, man, that score's getting out of control fast. Man, it seems like Klay Thompson's hitting every single one of those. But to think he had, I would have never guessed, 37 in a fucking quarter. I can't see that ever being eclipsed. And then what Curry gets within shooting range last night? Well, he got 26 in it.
26 last night in the third. Yeah.
So Keegs, what are your thoughts? I tend to be the voice of emotion and impulse on this show, and you guys are more the voice of reason. But I'm willing to say that nobody ever, and unless they make like a 5-point line, a couple feet behind that, so nobody's ever going to get more than 37 and a quarter. Are you on board with that?
Nah, never say never. I mean, he might break it himself, right? But you look at whose record he broke. I mean, Carmelo and Iceman, George Gervin, they had 33 and a quarter, but, you know, Iceman did it when there was no 3-point line. So,
yeah. Well, that's why Iceman said, he said he didn't break my record. He broke Carmelo's record. My record still stands.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Gervin's a man.
Yeah, I love that. There's a story about that one, too. He scored that the last game of the season. I don't know what year it was. Probably late 70s.
78.
David Thompson and him were basically tied for the scoring lead, you know, for the year, NBA scoring title.
Yeah.
And David Thompson comes out has an early game drop 73. And they figured out before the game, Gervin needed like 55 or something to keep his lead. He had a narrow lead. And so he comes out, he drops 63 in three quarters of play, including 33 points in the second quarter, set out the fourth quarter, got his scoring title. So that's
– wow.
That's great. And Thompson and him were both ABA guys, too, who just come into the NBA and doing that. That's phenomenal. Their rivalry had gone back.
That's exactly right. Yep. So that meant something, you know. Klay Thompson drops 37 against the Kings in kind of a relatively meaningless game. But I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see. I mean, 9 for 9 from three and 13 for 13 overall. I think those records are pretty safe for a quarter. Someone might get above 37, but I don't think they're not going to miss a shot. That was just incredible.
It was. I mean, it takes another team that has just been beaten down. You know, no energy, no defense. I'm not supposed to talk bad, inflammatory about the Kings, but I think I'm allowed to process with my mind what my eyes are seeing, and you know, it's been a rough month or two. Okay, Keegs, real quick, I know you want to weigh in on your boy and just incredible. I mean, Splash Brothers, this is all just so uplifting. I posted the other night. Seriously, this team reminds me of a late '80s Mike Tyson. Like somebody could stand in there for a round or two. But they're going to catch one. I mean, it's just too much. They have the arsenal. It's just too much. You got to be loving it.
Yeah.
That's over to Lindell.
Oh, yeah. Dude, it's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal to watch what's going on. You know, there is the one drawback is you saw it against the Bulls a couple weeks ago. They went 0 for 13 in the second half in overtime from three, and they let a game get away from them. But, you know, is that something that they're going to have happen four times? You know, it is questionable to see how this translates to the postseason. But I mean, it's the depth. No one has the depth that they have. They're bringing in, you know, they're bringing in David Lee and Iguodala off the bench. You know, they got Leandro Barbosa who's coming in and playing valuable minutes. They've got just a monster amount of depth. Behind the Splash Brothers and behind their starters. And you can't say enough about Draymond Green and what he's brought to the table this season and his improvement.
Oh, man,
I mentioned last year I sort of thought he was a poor man's Kawhi Leonard, and he sort of displayed it in the playoffs last year. He played great in the series against the Clippers, but I don't even think you can get rid of that poor man's. I mean, he just does everything. Last night, I think he had 2 points, but you could argue he was the MVP of the game.
Wow, yeah, you know, what a squad. Harrison Barnes on any given night. Maurice Spates is in there putting in, you know, big time minutes.
Mo Buckets.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know who your boy from Michigan State reminds me of is Draymond Green, is Wayman Tisdale a little bit in body tights.
Sure. It's a rare ability to be able to affect the game that much without scoring, and he just does it. He does everything, and he doesn't need to score at all. But he does, you know, he can, and he does at times. But you know, with this team, they don't need him to do that much. And also, I mean, it's the same thing with Iguodala and Lee. You know, these are two guys who've been all-stars who are really, really good NBA players. And they have just accepted their roles off the bench without any issue, and they've thrived in them. It's I've never had this much fun watching NBA basketball because I've never had a team that was, you know, the 2007 We Believe team was great to watch, but I mean there were pretty big flaws. It was not surprising that they got knocked out. It was great to watch. It was enjoyable, but I mean this team is I've never had this experience as an NBA fan before. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, this is pretty special, man. I agree. It's not since the Kings just after the turn of the century have I had this much fun watching basketball myself. This leads us right into the Cavs and Dubs in Vegas. We love to talk these Vegas championship odds throughout the year. Beginning of the year, I think you could have got the Warriors probably at, you know, a good 8, 9, 10 to 1. Now they're 3.5 to 1, which is tied for the lowest payout with Cleveland over there in the East. So let's throw it down to San Diego and Keegan Mack. you had to pick one of those two teams, 350, not a bad number at all. Tonight, who are you taking?
I'm on the train, man. The Warriors, they're, I mean, everything you guys said, I agree 100%. Statistically, the thing that's amazing is they're the top defensive team in the league, and if you look at efficiency, and the number three, just by a tight margin, on the top offensive team in the league. So that combination is just deadly. But the one thing, you know, the Cavs have, they got LeBron. Sorry, that goes without saying. He's brought the Cavs to the finals a couple times in, early in his career with worse teams in a more competitive East. So I could see those guys coming out of the East. The Warriors, the thing about them is that they've never even been to the conference finals yet, at least in this iteration of the Warriors. So usually you see a team that has to really, you know, they've got to earn their chops in the playoffs and have some battles, and usually they, you know, have a couple conference championship heartbreakers before they get even to the finals. So I would say that's the one thing, the one doubt in my mind, again, you know, with regards to the Warriors, when you look at all the other talented teams in the West and the path they have to go down. But I'm on board, man. These guys are fun to watch. They're a great team, and I wouldn't be surprised in the least if they're the NBA champs at the end of the season.
Ah, that would be so cool, because it would, you know, reinforce the idea that a team who plays up-tempo, fast, entertaining type of basketball can win it all, you know, and that it would – some championship teams have been on the exact other end of the spectrum recently, or, you know, these teams have made a push for us, Indiana, Detroit, we all know. Okay. Real quick here, that we've done this perfect thing. We've got a couple minutes left. NBA All-Star Weekend, a couple weekends from now, three-point shootout. Because this has become, you know, the NFL has become a passing league, and the NBA has become a three-point league. We love to see that high-octane, bombs-away type of stuff. Steph Curry, Kyle Korver, Klay Thompson, J.J. Redick, and Wesley Matthews. I'm looking at their odds all up on the board. This should be a real interesting one. You know there's going to be that guy. I'll toss it to you first here, Lindell. 30 seconds. You know there's going to be that guy who has an off night. It's just so hard to predict who that's going to be. I think it's going to be J.J. Redick and Wesley Matthews, and I think Steph Curry and Kyle Korver go to the finals, and Korver. Give me Kyle Korver. Who you got, Mr. French?
You know, Steph Curry and Kyle Korver have both been in it before more than once, and they have not been all that impressive. But this year it does feel different, and I think there are actually three guys make the finals this year. It's going to be fun because they've announced the order. Bellinelli is as the champion goes last, but then right before him is Korver, and then right before him are the two Splash Brothers. So the last four to go are Curry, Thompson, Korver, and Bellinelli. So it's gonna be fun, and we're gonna know what they're shooting for. I'd love to see both the Splash Brothers and Korver in as the final. I mean, that's the dream final, right? Korver's sort of the all timer. I would love to see that, but I think J.J. Redick might sneak in there over one of our boys from the Bay. It's gonna be fun. If I had to pick a winner, I'll take Klay Thompson.
Gotcha. That's plus 350. Not a bad payout there at all. Who are you going with, Keegs?
I got to go with Korver, man. He's shooting 53%. I mean, the NBA record for a season is 45%. And it's like, that was Steve Kerr, you know, it's 44, 45, 43. No one's come, he's 8 points higher. This is not a fluke. This is halfway through the season. You look at Steph Curry, he's more of a kind of off-the-dribble type guy, whereas Korver just sits in the corner. They kick it out to him, he shoots. So he didn't have a great year last year, but I think you got to go with Korver, man.
I got the numbers from Vantage Sports for no dribble, catch and shoot threes, wide open, zero dribble threes this season. Korver's at 53.6%, Klay 52.6%, Matthews 50%, Curry's 41%, J.J. Redick is at 55.6%. He's the top dog on the wide open catch and shoot threes this year.
That's a good stat right there.
That is so interesting. Wow.
So you're getting 5-1 odds on him.
Yeah. Damn, that is really interesting. Well, that's the end of it, fellas. That's the end of it. This has been the California Sports Report. I quietly and discreetly had about 6 or 7 drinks here, and nice and relaxed.
Well done.
Very glad.
Well done.
Everybody has joined us this evening. We'll be back more likely next Wednesday. We're going to kick it up into an hour show. So thank you. Thanks, Lindell. Hell of a job as always, buddy.
Absolutely. See you next week.
Keegs, I don't know if you guys are going to feel this atmospheric river. We have something called an atmospheric river coming over Sacramento in the upcoming days. But if you'll probably be spared because San Diego is fucking paradise. Anyways, buddy, thanks as always for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
For sure. All right. This has been the California Sports Report. I'm Sky Dickinson. On behalf of the boys here, thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you in one short week. Good night.